You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
On August 21st, 2015, 8 months after the terrorist attacks on the offices of Charlie Hebdo in Paris, Ayoub El-Kazani, a Moroccan national based in Brussels, planned to carry out a far larger and deadlier attack on a train from Brussels to Paris. But he was stopped by three American travelers, Anthony Sadler, Alex Garlatos, and Spencer Stone. They were friends taking a vacation. Because of their bravery and quick thinking, they saved hundreds of lives and became heroes in the eyes of the world. In their book, The 1517 to Paris, they detail not only that fateful train ride, but the unlikely circumstances that put them together on that train in the first place. It's co-written with Jeffrey Stern and published by Public Affairs, and I'm very pleased it has brought Anthony Sadler and Spencer Stone to our show today. Welcome.
Thank you for having us.
And Alec is off doing something. He's going to sniper school?
Yep, he's in a sniper school. It's about 6 weeks long. You know, he's out there. He loves that type of stuff, so I'm sure he's having real fun rolling around in the mud and shooting guns.
And how do you apply what you learn at a sniper school?
By going to war. Yeah. He's a soldier.
Yeah, he's a soldier, continuing his patriotic service.
You said that when the idea of a book first came about, you wondered how you were going to make a two-minute fight into a book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was such a stretch because it was just like this ordeal was such a small event. But then we linked with Jeffrey Stern, and he kind of fleshed out kind of all the coincidences that made what we did just go right for us, and just how we got there and just the different perspective and skills that we brought to the table. And it just ended up working out for us. So I think the book did a good job at letting the reader know like how we got to that point.
So let's start at the beginning. How did you originally come to know each other?
We actually met in middle school. Him, Alec, and Spencer were attending a middle school that I ended up coming to in eighth grade, and we've been friends ever since. We stopped going there. I stopped going there after a year, and they stopped going there shortly after, and we've been friends ever since.
And then Alec's mother is my mom's neighbor, so we've lived next to each other since we were five.
And why did you decide to take this trip together?
Well, I was stationed in the Azores, in Portugal. It's about 900 miles off the coast of mainland Portugal for the Air Force at the time.
We have Air Force stationed in the Azores?
Yes. It's more of a gas station. It's a very strategic spot. I don't think we'd ever want to give it up.
Yeah, but it's more of a vacation than anything.
But it was, yeah. It was pretty nice. I was pretty fortunate to get that assignment. But, you know, so I was out there. It was easy access to go travel. I was going to go alone. I didn't think that was maybe a good idea, so I invited Anthony. You know, of course, he was ready to go, tag along. And then Alec was actually on his way back from a deployment in Afghanistan. And me and Anthony started in Italy, and then we kind of worked our way up towards Amsterdam, and that's where Alec met us, and we all kind of got together.
Often when people travel abroad, they worry about things going wrong. As you were in Amsterdam en route to Paris, were you thinking about what might be the worst thing that could happen? Obviously not what happened.
Yeah, not that day. But my parents kind of like warned. They're like real nervous, watch the news all the time. So they warned me before we left. Like, you know, as Americans, we always have terrorism like in the back of our head. We just don't think it's going to happen to us. So like we didn't quite know that. But we kind of on the thought that maybe something could happen during the trip. But we never thought it would at all.
My number one concern before the attack was, am I going to have enough money to finish this trip? Because I was hearing nothing but that Paris is so expensive, and I was like, oh, I'm kind of pretty low on cash.
So, but you weren't thinking about Charlie Hebdo?
No. Yeah, it's kind of in the back of your mind. You think about it here and there, but you can't live your life that way.
Yeah, we never thought potentially something like that could happen to us, but we were definitely wrong. So now it's something that crosses our mind all the time. I actually can't escape it.
Until 9/11, we never thought anything like that could happen to us in this country.
Exactly.
So how close were you to not taking the train?
So close. So many instances where we almost didn't get on. We actually arrived to Amsterdam on a Tuesday, and we bought our departing tickets for that Friday on Tuesday when we got there. So we were having spent a few days in Amsterdam. We were having so much fun, we almost wanted to stay the weekend through. And we basically just decided to keep our tickets since we already purchased them instead of trying to return them and all that process. And then we were actually helping an older gentleman with his bags. So we got onto the wrong train car, and it was bad Wi-Fi on that. So we ended up going to our correct train car where there's better Wi-Fi, actually. And that's where everything happened. So there's so many instances where we were almost not even on that train car. So it's pretty cool. Then we fleshed that out in the book, and we finally have a chance to be able to, like, tell the readers that.
Can you take us through what happened and what you were feeling at the time?
Yeah, I mean, I was asleep. Anthony was asleep. Alec was right next to me. And I wake up to a train employee sprinting by me down the hall towards the front of the train. Alex already turned around in his seat, looking backwards. You know, he looks like he sees a ghost. And then so I kind of wonder what's going on. I got my headphones on. I take them off. I hear glass breaking, people screaming. The first thing I see is when I turn around is Kazani coming through the doorway with a shirtless backpack strapped to the front, picking up an AK-47 off the ground and cocking it back and loading around into the chamber. And, I mean, my initial thoughts, I mean, you recognize it immediately. It doesn't take a rocket science to see what was going on. He was acting very frantically. You know, there's not a lot of guys shirtless with an AK-47 yeah, walking around on a train.
What do you think the shirtless meant?
I don't know. I think he just wanted to go full warrior or something. But so, you know, I recognized what was going on. One, you know, I thought no one was doing anything, and I've had some training throughout my life. I practice jiu-jitsu. I'm an EMT. I'm in the military. So, like, naturally, I like to, you know, like, service before self and just help others, put others first. And so I said, well, hey, and, you know, you're in a box in the middle of the countryside with this guy. There's nowhere to go. You got option A, sit there and die. Option B, you know, try, go down fighting. And so I just take off at a full sprint towards him. He points the gun at me, pulls the trigger. There was a bad primer in the bullet, so the firing pin hit the primer in the bullet, but it just didn't go off.
Just another instance of something.
So that was a very lucky moment.
Yeah, right. All he had to do was charge the weapon again, and he could have started firing. But just the fact that Spencer had gotten up so fast and charged him, I feel like it threw him off. And it's just one of the many instances that, like, went our way that day.
Yeah, I should have died at least 3 or 4 times during that whole
time. You charged him from what distance?
I mean, he was about 30 feet away from me. So pretty much he tried to shoot me right when I stood up.
You were dead under normal circumstances.
Exactly.
Any other day, same gun, any other day, we were all dead. So it's a pretty crazy story.
And Spencer, you went to assist someone who was injured.
Yeah, Mark McGallion. He was a big help in the fight. He was standing outside waiting to go to the bathroom with another passenger who wants to remain anonymous. And he actually ended up taking the AK-47 from him and coming into our train car. But then once El Kazani pulled out his pistol and shot Mark in the back, the bullet bounced around his rib cage, broke 2 ribs, collapsed his left lung, and came flying on his neck. It severed his carotid artery. And I ended up having to plug his artery for him. And
you had medical training.
Yeah, I'm an EMT.
But had you ever seen anything like that before?
No, I've been working in a pediatric clinic my whole entire career. I was in ambulance services in the Azores, but, you know, not much goes on there. So.
But you also injured during the fight.
Yep, I had my thumb severed, my tendon nerve in my thumb, and I had 2 long lacerations on my back. I was trying to, like, cut my throat.
When you're involved in this kind of thing and the adrenaline is flowing, are you totally aware of the pain?
He didn't even know. I had to tell him.
He
was he crawled over to Mark to plug his hole up, and I didn't really notice either. I just saw a lot of blood on him. I thought it was the terrorist blood, but then he kind of moved and the back of his neck opened up, and I was like, Spencer, I was like, try not to move too much because you're bleeding. He was like, is it bad? And I was just like, yeah, but you're all right. And he was just like, okay. And he didn't even panic, so it was good. It was kind of a funny situation.
Yeah.
Can you talk a bit about your what was happening with you, Anthony?
Yeah, basically, we woke up at the same time, and we all turned around to look at what was happening. And the first thing we see is him, as Kazani, entering the train car, charging the weapon. So I'm still trying to process, like, is this really happening? I'm pretty sure I asked myself that. And within seconds, Spencer had gone up out of his seat, and he started charging him, and then he tackled him. So I was like, at that point, I was like, he made it. Like, we have to go help him. So it was more instinctually going to help my friend other than subduing the gunman. At that point, I was just really like, I can't just let him go alone. So we got over there, me and Alec. Spencer kicked him off. We, like, kind of hit him a few times, and Spencer was able to, like, lock in the choke, and eventually he passed out.
And you started filming at one point.
Yeah, after we tied him up, and everything was like relatively calm. After we rounded up the weapons and everything, I was just like, not thinking for media. I was just more for myself. I was just like, there's no way, like, I have to record something. I was just like, there's no way. I barely don't even believe this myself. And it ended up being relevant to all the media afterward.
Were you worried that there might be more than one attacker, that this was not a lone wolf?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And that's what I'm so grateful Alec was there for. Because I was thinking in my head, but, I mean, once I had my finger in Mark's neck, I knew I was stuck in that position. I'm not going anywhere. And so Alec had actually ended up clearing a few rounds out of the AK and then taking it back through the rest of the train to check if anyone else was trying to do anything. And fortunately, no one was, and he came back, and we kind of took the ammunition out of the weapons and set him to the side.
My guests are Anthony Sadler and Spencer Stone, who, along with Alex Carlatos, are the subjects of the 1517 to Paris, the true story of a terrorist train and three American heroes. It is written with the help of Jeffrey Stern. At one point, you started shooting, didn't you?
Oh, no. That was actually Alec. Mm-hmm. When I had him in the chokehold, Alec had picked up the first choke, because I had to put him in it in two separate occasions. So during the first one, Alec picked up the AK-47 and was going to shoot him. And I kind of gave him a look, like, in that moment, you're not thinking real clearly. I just knew, like, any second, because he had already tried to shoot me with a pistol, too. He's cutting my neck. I was like, I just shoot this guy. And if, you know, it happens to go through him and shoot me, too, just whatever. Mm-hmm. So I'll just take one for the team, I guess. There's another moment when he kind of flung himself at me, and we had to pin him against the table. And Alec was going to shoot him with the handgun, but there was no ammunition in it.
There was like three or four times, the pistol and the AK, that was tried to fire by either the gunman or Alec, and it just didn't go off for whatever reason. It's pretty amazing.
So here's this guy who comes to make a major terrorist attack, and he doesn't have any bullets in his gun, and his AK doesn't go off.
Yeah, it was basically the worst terrorist ever. We were pretty lucky.
Did you start patrolling the train looking for other terrorists?
Alec did. I was going through the first aid kit trying to aid Spencer. Like, I didn't. He was basically just dumping the first aid kit out. Like, do you need this? Do you need this? Why, he had his fingers in Mark's neck, and Alec took the weapons and walked through the rest of the train, came back, and he said nothing was happening.
What about the other passengers? Were they just watching this?
I mean, during the fight, yes, but, like, to be fair, there wasn't a lot of room.
But nobody got up and said, let me help you?
Well, they did once he was unconscious. People started to help out a lot.
And what about the French train employees?
That's a whole nother story.
We don't know where they were. I know that came out in the news later that they were locked in a bathroom, but we didn't even know that. Like,
locked themselves in, or they were locked in?
Well, I'm assuming that's what happened, because there was a famous French actor on the train who kind of leaked it to the news, really, about how badly they conducted themselves.
Who was the actor?
I don't want to pronounce his name incorrectly, but I'll go ahead and butcher it anyway. So that's Jean Hughes. He's big in France, but he kind of leaked it out that, and I guess it makes more sense when we woke up and the train employee was literally in a full sprint in the other direction, that he took him and his coworkers and kind of locked themselves in somewhat of a safe room and pretty much left everyone else to die.
But didn't one train employee interfere?
No. Near the end, but he didn't know what was going on.
Yeah, he had no idea.
He came late to the party.
Yeah, he came so late. Like, he was already unconscious. The fourth passenger, Chris Norman, he came to help us tie him up with neckties. So he was a big help, actually. But by the time we saw the first employee, the ordeal was already over.
It was set in.
How long before you pulled him to the next station?
Probably about 30 minutes. The fight was probably like a minute to 2 minutes, not long at all. And then we had him tied up, and Spencer had his fingers in Mark's neck for about 20 to 30 minutes.
And then finally you were able to hand him over to medics?
Yeah.
Were they aware at the station of had happened?
Not necessarily.
There was like SWAT-type police and so many paramedics. I don't know if they knew the situation, but there was enough personnel that they knew it was serious. I don't know if they quite knew what the situation was. And then we had him hogtied, and the police just carried him out hogtied. They didn't even untie him.
Yeah, that was pretty funny. They're just like, oh, this looks good, and they just swooped him up and took him out of there.
Yeah, so.
And you were instant heroes.
Yeah, instantly.
Is that, is that a weird thing to have to deal with? All suddenly everybody taking your picture and conferences, news conferences?
Yeah.
It was a little odd in the beginning.
We were just normal friends like before. People think we were like these combat ready veterans, but it's just like they happen to be in the military, but it's just like we were just normal friends on a European vacation and that happened to us.
What about parents? They were notified pretty soon.
Yeah. Well, I actually called my dad in like 2 hours after. It's like in the prologue of the book, the text message that I sent to him. And I was just
Your cell phone worked?
Yeah, I was just like, call me. And he, I'm bracing myself. How do I tell him we just stopped a terrorist? Like, so I just flat out said it like that. Like a guy got on the train. He was about to shoot everybody and we beat him up before he did. And he was just like, okay, call me back. And I was just like, all right.
Well, I was in the hospital. So while they were out eating steak and drinking wine at a nice restaurant, I'm in the hospital. I'm the only English speaking person there. Really, there was, someone that could speak pretty good English, but not too well.
What town is this?
This was in Arras. Mm-hmm. So I got to talk to my mom later that night, and so they had all found out way before I could tell them, and they just, hey, because they knew two things. They knew one person had been shot, one person had been cut with a knife, and so they were just hoping that I got cut with the knife.
One odd detail from the book, didn't your mother try to get Donald Trump to lend her his private jet so she could get to Paris?
It's more of like a quirky statement. Like she did. She sent out an email because she was just like, oh, I got to get over there.
She should have tweeted him.
I know, right? And she was like, can we please use your plane? Well, I was like, Mom, that's not going to work.
Did she ever hear back from him?
No.
Interesting enough, though, CEO of Columbia Sportswear, Tim Boyle, he actually stepped up and let our mothers use his private jet fly them out to Paris probably a day after. So it was a quick response, and we're indebted to the Boyles for sure.
Yeah, exactly. They changed around international flights. They just did amazing things for us.
You've been honored at the White House, but have you heard from either of the presidential candidates?
Donald Trump, I know, tweeted support for us when it first happened, but that's the extent of it for sure.
Mm-hmm. Have you? Well, you look okay, Spencer. You look like you've totally recovered. Have you?
Yeah. Besides just being really out of shape, yeah. I mean, I'm fortunate enough to be pretty much 100% recovered. I got some, issues with my thumb and things like that, and I keloided a lot with scars, and so that irritates me and kind of hurts every now and then. But I mean, that's small.
You had a severed nerve.
Yeah, exactly.
That's
so
forever.
Lost a lot of feeling in there, and. But, I can pick things up, put them down. It's all good.
A few months later, there were the terrorist attacks at the Bataclan in Paris. Do you think they were connected?
Yeah,
it actually
came out that they were part of the same sect in Paris. They actually knew each other originally from Morocco. So
yeah.
I
same
think that's going to actually get dragged out into the trial. Not too sure the extent of their connection, but they did know each other. So that's was pretty interesting fact.
Do you ever worry that you might become targets because of what you did?
I hope not.
I mean, it enters my mind here and there, but, at the end of the day, what are you going to do? If things are going to happen, they're going to happen. So I just kind of, live my life, enjoy every day.
The reason I ask is, Anthony, you said you can't escape thinking about terrorism now.
Yeah, it's just like something that actually moved from like the back of our minds. Like it's like it was so unrealistic, I thought, before until it happened to me. So now it's kind of like, we have like a personal connection to it. It's not something that we live in fear or it bothers us. I think it's just something that we actually have a connection to now because we were actually involved in a terrorist attack one time. But it's not something that like dictates how we live, though.
Spencer, weren't you stabbed several months later?
I was, yep, in all places, my hometown.
Not a terrorist.
Not a terrorist, no. They had no idea who I was. It just was an unfortunate situation, and he decided to stab me in a 1-on-5 fight. So
was Alec the one who was luckiest in all of this? He didn't get hurt, and
I would say
he wound
so.
Up on dancing
he's
with the stars,
dancing his little butt off, and traveling.
He's got a good deal out of
not
it.
Not a scratch,
sure.
And he got high marks. I don't know whether it was because he's a great dancer or because
he's just
involved
guy.
In this.
Yeah,
I think America had our back with that one. So he made it to the last show for sure. That was pretty interesting. We got a chance to go down there and watch it and witness him dance, cracked a couple jokes on him. It was cool.
I thank you so much for being on our show.
Thank you for having us.
Have your lives returned to normal?
Not yet. I think it will soon, though.
The book is
going to change it again.
Yeah, exactly. So we're definitely on a different whirlwind with the book, but it's a pretty fun experience we've had for sure.
the 1517 to Paris, the true story of a terrorist, a train, and three American heroes. And my great thanks to Anthony Sadler and Spencer Stone for being here. Alec Skarlatos couldn't make it because he is at sniper school. He's the third one. And the book is written with the help of Jeffrey E. Stern. It is published by Public Affairs. Thank you so much for being on our show.
Thanks for having us, sir.